Chapter 17. Questions of Control. "You should be more careful," Serene said from inside the room. "The Ammerlin seat, we have much influence with her. Your punishments, we may be able to persuade her to lessen them, if you're helpful." Semirag's sniff of disdain was quite audible to Cadswain, listening from the hallway outside the interrogation room, sitting in a comfortable log chair. Cadswain sipped at a cup of warm sweat leaf. The hallway was of simple wood, carpeted with a long maroon and white rug, prism-like lamps on the walls flickering with light. There were several others in the hallway with her: Daigyan, Arian, Elza, whose turn it was to maintain Semirag's shield. Aside from Cadswain, each Aes Sedai in the camp took turns. It was too dangerous to risk forcing the duty only on the Aes Sedai of lesser stature, lest they grow weary. The shield had to remain strong. Light only knew what would happen if Semirag got free. Cadswain sipped her tea, her back to the wall. Althor had insisted that his Aes Sedai be allowed opportunities to interrogate Semirag, instead of just those Cadswain had chosen. She wasn't certain if this was some attempt at asserting his authority, or if he genuinely thought that they might succeed where she, so far, had failed. Anyway, that was why Serene was doing the questioning today. The Tara Bonner White was a thoughtful person, completely unaware that she was one of the most beautiful women to gain the shawl in years. Her nonchalance was not unexpected, as she was of the white Aja, who could often be as oblivious as Browns. Serene also didn't know that Cadswain was outside, eavesdropping, through the use of a small weave of spirit. It was a simple trick, one often learned by novices. Mixing it with this newly found trick of inverting one's weaves meant that Cadswain could listen in without anyone inside knowing that she was there. The Aes Sedai outside saw what she was doing, of course, but none said anything. Even though two of them, Elza and Arian, were among the group of fools who had sworn fealty to the Althor boy, they stepped lightly around her. They knew how she regarded them. Idiot women. At times it seemed that half of her allies were only determined to make her job harder. Serene continued her interrogation inside. Most of the Aes Sedai in the manor had now given questioning a try. Brown, green, white, and yellow, all had failed. Cadswain herself had yet to address any questions to the Forsaken personally. The other Aes Sedai looked at her as an almost mythic figure, a reputation she had nurtured. She'd stayed away from the White Tower for many decades at a time, ensuring that many would assume she was dead. When she reappeared, it made a stir. She'd gone hunting false dragons, both because it was necessary and because each man she captured added to her reputation with the other Aes Sedai. All her work pointed at these final days. Light blind her if she was going to let that Althor boy ruin it all now. She covered her scowl by taking a sip of her tea. She was slowly losing control, thread by thread. Once, something as dramatic as the squabbles at the White Tower would have drawn her immediate attention. But she couldn't begin to work on that problem. Creation itself was unraveling, and her only way to fight that was to turn all her efforts on Althor. And he resisted her every attempt to aid him. Step by step, he was becoming a man with insides like stone, unmoving and unable to adapt. A statue with no feelings could not face the Dark One. Blasted boy. And now there was Semirag, continuing to defy her. Cadswain itched to go in and confront the woman, but Maurice had asked the very questions Cadswain would have, and she had failed. How long would Cadswain's image remain intact if she proved herself as impotent as the others? Serene began to talk again. "The Aes Sedai, you should not treat them so," Serene said, voice calm. "Aes Sedai," Semirag responded, chuckling. "Don't you feel ashamed, using that term to describe yourselves? Like a puppy calling itself a wolf. We may not know everything, I admit, but you know nothing, Semirag replied. You are children playing with your parents' toys. Catswain tapped the side of her teacup with her index finger. Again she was struck by the similarities between herself and Semirag, and again those similarities made her insides itch. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw a slender serving woman climb the steps, carrying a plate of beans and steamed radishes for Semirag's midday meal. Time already? Serene had been interrogating the Forsaken for 3 hours, and she'd been talked neatly in circles the entire time. The serving woman approached, and Cadswain waved for her to enter. A moment later, the tray crashed to the floor. At the sound, Cadswain leaped to her feet, embracing Sidar, quite nearly rushing into the room. Semirag's voice made Cadswain hesitate. I will not eat that, the Forsaken said, in control, as always. I have grown tired of your swill. You will bring me something appropriate. If we do, Serene's voice said, obviously snatching for any advantage. Will you answer our questions? Perhaps, Semirag replied. We shall see if it fits my mood. There was silence. Cadswain glanced at the other women in the hall, all of whom had leaped to their feet at the sound, although they couldn't hear the voices. She motioned them to sit down. Go and fetch her something else, Serene said, speaking inside the room to the serving woman, and send someone to clean this up. The door opened, then shut quickly as the servant hurried away. Serene continued, This next question, it will determine if you actually get to eat that meal or not. Despite the firm voice, Cadswain could hear a quickness to Serene's words. The sudden drop of the tray of food had startled her. They were all so jumpy around the Forsaken. They weren't deferential, but they did treat Semirag with a measure of respect. How could they not? She was a legend. One did not enter the presence of such a creature, one of the most evil beings ever to live, and not feel at least a measure of awe. Measure of awe? That's our mistake, Cadswain whispered. She blinked, then turned and opened the door into the room. Semirag stood in the center of the small chamber. She had been retied in air, the weaves likely woven the moment that she'd dropped her tray. The brass platter lay discarded, the beans soaking juice into the aged wooden boards. This room had no window. It had been a storage chamber at one point, converted into a cell to hold the Forsaken. Serene, dark hair and beaded braids, beautiful face, surprised at the intrusion, sat in a chair before Semirag. Her warder, Vitalian, broad-shouldered and ashen-faced, stood in the corner. Semirag's head was not bound, and her eyes flicked toward Cadswain. Cadswain had committed herself. She had to confront the woman now. Fortunately, what she planned didn't require much delicacy. It all came back to a single question. How would Cadswain break herself? The solution was easy, now that it occurred to her. Cadswain said with a no-nonsense attitude. I see that the child has refused her meal. Serene, release your weaves. Semirag raised her eyebrows and opened her mouth to scoff, but as Serene released her weaves of air, Cadswain grabbed Semirag by the hair and, with a casual sweep of her foot, knocked the woman's legs out from beneath her, dropping her to the floor. Perhaps she could have used the power, but it felt right to use her hands for this. She prepared a few weaves, though she probably wouldn't need them. Semirag, though tall, was a woman of willowy build, and Cadswain herself had always been more stout than she was slim. Plus, the Forsaken seemed utterly dumbfounded at how she was being treated. Cadswain knelt down with one knee on the woman's back, then shoved her face forward into the spilled food. Eat, she said. I don't approve of wasted food, child, particularly during these times. Semirag sputtered, releasing a few phrases that Cadswain could only assume were oaths, though she didn't recognize any of them. The meanings were likely lost in time. Soon the oaths subsided, and Semirag grew still. She didn't fight back. Catswain wouldn't have either. That would only hurt her image. Semirag's power as a captive came from the fear and respect that the Aes Sedai gave her. Catswain needed to change that. "Your chair, please," she said to Serene. The White stood, looking shocked. They had tried all measure of torture available to them under Althor's requirements, but each of those had betrayed esteem. They were treating Semirag as a dangerous force and a worthy enemy. That would only bolster her ego. "Are you going to eat?" Cadswain asked. "I will kill you," Semirag said calmly. "First, before all of the others, I will make them listen to you scream."
"I see," Cadswain replied.
"Serene, go tell the three sisters outside to come in." Cadswain paused, thoughtful. "Also, I saw some maids cleaning rooms on the other side of the hallway. Fetch them for me as well." Serene nodded, rushing from the room. Cadswain sat in the chair, then wove threads of air and picked Semirag up. Elza and Arian glanced into the room, looking very curious. Then they entered, Serene following. A few moments later, Daigyan entered with five servants, three Damani women in aprons, one spindly man, his fingers brown with stain from re-coating logs, and a single serving boy. Excellent. As they entered, Cadswain used her threads of air to turn Semirag around across her knee, and then she proceeded to spank the Forsaken. Semirag held out at first. Then she began to curse. Then she began to sputter out threats. Cadswain continued, her hand beginning to hurt. Semirag's threats turned to howls of outrage and pain. The serving girl with the food returned in the middle of it, adding even more to Semirag's shame. The Aes Sedai watched with slack jaws. "Now," Cadswain said after a few moments, breaking into one of Semirag's howls of pain. "Will you eat?"
"I'll find everyone you've ever loved," the Forsaken said, tears in her eyes. "I'll feed them to each other while you watch. I'll—"
Cadswain tisked and began again. The crowd in the room watched in amazed silence. Semirag began to cry, not from the pain, but from the humiliation. That was the key. Semirag could not be defeated by pain or by persuasion, but destroying her image, that would be more terrible in her mind than any other punishment, just as it would have been for Cadswain. Cadswain stilled her hand after a few more minutes, releasing the weaves that held Semirag motionless. "Will you eat?" she asked.
"I—"
Cadswain raised her hand, and Semirag practically leaped off of her lap and scrambled onto the floor, eating the beans.
"She is a person," Cadswain said, looking at the others. "Just a person, like any of us. She has secrets, but any young boy can have a secret that he refuses to tell. Remember that." Cadswain stood and walked to the door. She hesitated beside Serene, who watched with fascination as the Forsaken ate beans off of the floor. "You may want to begin carrying a hairbrush with you," Cadswain added. "That can be quite hard on your hands." Serene smiled.
"Yes, Cadswain Sedai."
Now, Cadswain thought, leaving the room, what to do about Althor?
"My lord," Grady said, rubbing his weathered face, "I don't think you understand."
"Then explain it to me," Perrin said. He stood on a hillside looking down over the huge gathering of refugees and soldiers. Mismatched tents of many different designs, tan, single-peaked Aiel structures, colorful large Kyrianan ones, two-tipped tents of basic design, sprang up as the people prepared for the night. The Shido Aiel, as hoped, had not given chase. They had let Perrin's army withdraw, though his scouts said that they had now moved in to investigate the city. Either way, it meant Perrin had time. Time to rest, time to limp away, time, he'd hoped, to use gateways to transport away most of these refugees. Light, but it was a big group. Thousands upon thousands of people, a nightmare to coordinate and administer to. His last few days had been filled with an endless stream of complaints, objections, judgments, and papers. Where did Bulwer find so much paper? It seemed to satisfy many of the people who came to Perrin. Judgments and the settlements of disputes seemed so much more official to them when a piece of paper outlined them. Bulwer said Perrin would need a seal. The work had been distracting, which was good, but Perrin knew he couldn't push aside his problems for long. Rand pulled him northward. Perrin had to march for the last battle. Nothing else mattered. And yet that very single-mindedness in him, ignoring everything but his objective, had been the source of much trouble during his hunt for Fael. He had to find a balance somehow. He needed to decide for himself if he wanted to lead these people. He needed to make peace with the wolf inside himself, the beast that raged when he went into battle. But before he could do any of that, he needed to get the refugees home. That was proving a problem. "You've had time to rest now, Grady," Perrin said. "The fatigue is only one part of it, my lord," Grady said. "Though honestly, I still feel as if I could sleep a week's time." He did look tired. Grady was a stalwart man, with the face of a farmer and the temperament of one, too. Perrin would trust this man to do his duty before most lords he'd known. But Grady could be pushed only so far. What did it do to a man to have to channel so much? Grady had bags beneath his eyes, and his face was pale despite his tanned skin. Though he was still a young man, he'd started to go gray. "Light, but I use this man too hard," Perrin thought. Him and Niald both. That had been another effect of Perrin's single-mindedness, as he was beginning to see. What he'd done to Aram, how he'd allowed those around him to go without leadership. "I have to fix this. I have to find a way to deal with it all." If he didn't, he might not get to the last battle. "Here's the thing, my lord." Grady rubbed his chin again, surveying the camp. The various contingents, Mayenners, Aleandra's guard, the Two Rivers men, the Aiel, the refugees from various cities, all camped separately in their own rings. "There are some 100,000 people who need to get home. The ones that will leave, anyway. Many say they feel safer here, with you." "They can give over wanting that," Perrin said. "They belong with their families." "And the ones whose families are in Seanchan lands?" Grady shrugged. "Before the invaders came, many of these people would be happy to return. But now, well, they keep talking about staying where there's food and protection." "We can still send the ones who want to go," Perrin said. "We'll travel lighter without them." Grady shook his head. "That's the thing, my lord. Your man Bulwer, he gave us a count. I can make a gateway big enough for about 2 men to walk through at once. If you figure them taking 1 second to go through, well, it would take hours and hours to send them all. I don't know the number, but he claimed it would be days' worth of work, and he said that his estimates were probably too optimistic. My lord, I could barely keep a gateway open an hour with how tired I am." Perrin gritted his teeth. He'd have to get those numbers from Bulwer himself, but he had a sinking feeling that Bulwer would be right. "We'll keep marching then," Perrin said, "moving north. Each day we'll have you and Niald make gateways and return some of the people to their homes. But don't tire yourselves." Grady nodded, eyes hollow from fatigue. Perhaps it would be best to wait a few more days before starting the process. Perrin nodded a dismissal to the dedicated, and Grady jogged back down into camp. Perrin remained on the hillside, inspecting the various sections of the camp as the people prepared for the evening meal. The wagons sat at the center of the camp, laden with food that, he feared, would run out before he could reach Andor. Or should he go around to Kyrian? That was where he had last seen Rand, though his visions of the man made it seem he wasn't in either country. He doubted the Queen of Andor would welcome him with open arms after the rumors about him and that blasted Red Eagle banner. Perrin left that problem alone for the moment. The camp seemed to be settling in. Each ring of tents sent representatives to the central food depot to claim their evening rations. Each group was in charge of its own meals. Perrin just oversaw the distribution of materials. He made out the quartermaster, a Kyrianan named Bavin Rockshaw, standing on the back of a wagon, dealing with each representative in turn. Satisfied with his inspection, Perrin walked down into the camp, passing through the Kyrianan tents on the way to his own tents, which were with the Two Rivers men. He took his enhanced senses for granted now. They had come along with the yellowing of his eyes. Most people around him didn't seem to notice those anymore, but he was starkly reminded of the contrast when he met anyone new. Many of the Kyrianan refugees, for instance, paused in their labors, setting up tents. They watched him as he passed, whispering, "Golden Eyes." He didn't much care for the name. Ebarra was the name of his family, and he bore it proudly. He was one of the few who could pass it on. Trollocs had seen to that. He shot a glance at a nearby group of the refugees, and they hastily turned back to pounding in tent stakes. As they did, Perrin passed a couple of Two Rivers men, Todd Elkar and Jory Conger. They saw him and saluted, fists to hearts. To them, Perrin Golden Eyes wasn't a person to fear, but one to respect, although they did still whisper about that night he'd spent in Berelane's tent. Perrin wished he could escape the shadow of that event. The men were still enthusiastic and energized by their defeat of the Shido, but it hadn't been too long ago that Perrin had felt he wasn't welcome among them. Still, for the moment, these two seemed to have set aside that displeasure. Instead, they saluted. Had they forgotten that Perrin had grown up with them? What are the times when Jory had made sport of Perrin's slow tongue, or the times when he'd stopped by the forge to brag about which girls he'd managed to steal a kiss from? Perrin just nodded back. No use in digging up the past, not when their allegiance to Perrin Golden Eyes had helped rescue Fael. Though, as he left them, his two keen ears caught the two of them chatting about the battle, just a few days past, and their part of it. One of them still smelled like blood. He hadn't cleaned his boots. He probably didn't even notice the blood-stained mud. Sometimes, Perrin wondered if his senses weren't actually any better than anyone else's. He took the time to notice things that others ignored. How could they miss that scent of blood, and the crisp air of the mountains to the north? It smelled of home, though they were many leagues from the Two Rivers. If other men took the time to close their eyes and pay attention, would they be able to smell what he did? If they opened those eyes and looked closer at the world around them, would men call their eyes keen as they did Perrin's? No. That was just fancy. His senses were better. His kinship with the wolves had changed him. He hadn't thought of that kinship in a while. He'd been too focused on Fael. But he'd stopped feeling so self-conscious about his eyes. They were part of him. No use grumbling about them. And yet that rage he felt when he fought, that loss of control, it worried him more and more. The first time he'd felt it had been that night so long ago fighting White Cloaks. For a time, Perrin hadn't known if he was a wolf or a man. And now, during one of his recent visits to the wolf dream, he'd tried to kill Hopper. In the wolf dream, death was final. Perrin had almost lost himself that day. Thinking of it awakened old fears, fears he'd shoved aside. Fears relating to a man behaving like a wolf, locked in a cage. He continued down the pathway to his tent, making some decisions. He'd pursued Fael with determination, avoiding the wolf dream as he'd avoided all of his responsibilities. He'd claimed that nothing else had mattered. But he knew that the truth was much more difficult. He'd focused on Fael because he loved her so much, but, in addition, he'd done so because it had been convenient. Her rescue had been an excuse to avoid things like his discomfort with leadership and the blurred truce between himself and the wolf inside of himself. He had rescued Fael, but so many other things were still wrong. The answers might lie in his dreams. It was time to return.